This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. Our today's guest is Olivia Milton, CMO at Reply.io. Welcome to our show.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me here.
Yeah, Olivia, super excited to have you joining us today. Let's dive right in. Give us the high-level pitch, the elevator pitch, if you will, of Reply.io.
We at Reply automate the whole process of sales prospecting, sales outreach, and lead generation for small and medium businesses. We heavily use AI to help with everything, basically, this process, starting from audience suggestion, knowing the ideal customer profile, to crafting messages, to crafting sequences, multi-channel sequences, responding to prospect emails on behalf of the user, converting website traffic into leads, and combining the two channels, outbound and inbound, together to create a consistent flow of leads for the businesses.
You are covering a lot of different use cases within the product, which is awesome.
Exactly.
And I'm excited to see parts of the product during your demo. You've been at the company almost from the beginning. I would love to hear the founder's story and then also just your story and journey with the company.
Sure. So the company was founded in 2015. And I think that was almost the same time when the whole niche, the industry of sales engagement, or at that time that was a sales acceleration industry, appeared. At Reply, we were like, I think, third or fifth company doing that sort of automation. We call it sales automation, or automating personal communication at scale. And our main audience was at that time, and actually is right now, sales reps, founders of businesses, you know, those people who need to scale their personal communication heavily. And I joined the company in 2016. So I've been here for a long time. And that was a truly exciting story and my personal evolution here. So I'm super excited what's next and sometimes reflecting on what has already happened.
Yeah. And what were you doing before? Were you at another, you know, go-to-market tech tool or in a sales position yourself? What made you interested in joining Reply?
My professional career is connected with B2B marketing. I was a marketing manager at Creatio. It was formerly BPM Online. And when I met Oleg Bilasor, Reply's CEO and founder, I was so excited to join the startup, you know, this team of enthusiasts who are willing to change the world, really, and they believe they can do it. And it was a no-brainer. I wanted to be a part of the big story, and Reply turned out to be a big story. So I used all my experience in promoting and marketing the B2B tech in the US markets to Reply, and here I am.
Yeah, that makes sense. And if you're in the marketing role and you see a tool that's helping the marketing and sales team work together more, it makes a lot of sense, especially when you're on the cutting edge of a new industry, if you will, in like the sales automation world. And so Reply is based in Ukraine, which I think is a little unique to a lot of the companies and founders that we talk to. Would you be willing to share a little bit about the experience of what it's like building a business while a war is taking place in your country?
Well, I wish we had another experience, of course, to share. But anyways, if I could just consider how to translate this experience to help our business peers to learn from it. We've been remote company, and basically when the COVID-19 started in early 2020 in the US, well, nothing changed for us. And when the war started in 2022, we benefited from our distributed teams. So in terms of business processes, basically being remote is the huge power that companies can leverage because they are more invincible. They can adapt. These people are in safe territories right now. So basically, when the full scale was started, we had the list of people who lived in more or less safe territories, like in the western parts of Ukraine or living abroad, because a lot of our employees live in Europe, in the United States, Canada. So if some bad things happen in territories that are closer to the front lines, then in terms of the overall morale in our company, but that was a huge impact. But I can say for sure that we were united as never before. Like, I think that we were the same united at the beginning of this company, because everyone realized that, like, you know, when you have such a negative outside impact, you want to convert this energy, I could say so, to something more productive, because you cannot live with this energy inside. It's just so huge, like such a huge pressure on you from the outside. And everyone wanted to convert this energy. Like, some people worked 24/7, literally, because they could not do it in the other way. Some people were heavily volunteering, you know, bringing drones and all this military equipment from the abroad to Ukraine. And it was like 24/7. I think it lost this intense living through the war, lost it, I think, the whole 2022 year. Like, well, here we're like in this regime of 24/7. Volunteering, working, it all happens simultaneously. And I can say that in 2024, at Reply, we had 40% growth. Can you imagine, like, industry peers, friends, can you imagine that during the war, having a part of employees living in the country where the war is happening, you can still grow and people can be heavily motivated. People can just live and breathe how to grow the company, because they need something to rely on. They need something that is not affected of war.
Yeah.
The work was some, you know, safe place.
A little bit of an escape almost from what was happening.
Exactly.
Around. Yeah. I mean, 40% growth is challenging to do when everything's going well. And so it's remarkable that you guys were able to do that.
Yeah. A lot of resilience and a lot of teamwork, and I'm happy that people figured out how to actually help, you know, not necessarily be on the front line, but contribute in the better economical output of the company that is located in Ukraine, right? So that's amazing.
Yeah, and I think what I heard in that is just around a culture of flexibility, and I didn't even think about COVID happening. I want that like in the rearview mirror, but it's like back-to-back things. One that the world went through and then one that you guys had to continue to live through. So yes, a ton of resilience. And thank you for sharing, you know, what that experience has been like.
My pleasure. Like, I really want to help others think about such tremendous challenges as not something that is ending your business or ending your life that you've got used to. Well, actually, the life that you've got used to is ending, like, with such things like war, but it is evolving into something else. And this evolution can be quite of interesting, and it can result in growth, in business growth, professional growth, growth of motivation inside the company. So, like, even such challenges as war can cause really good changes in business, if I can say so.
Yeah, I mean, human beings are amazing, and the Ukrainian people have showcased that. And it's interesting to hear it in the story of a company and how you're dealing with that. So it's not something I think people think about, right? Like, they're thinking about the front lines, and it's like, well, other things are happening too. It's a tough transition. But you mentioned that you grew 40%. Where are you at in terms of financing? Have you raised rounds? It sounds like you're most likely profitable. What does financing look like for Reply?
You mean in 2024, growth of 40%? There wasn't anything extraordinary in terms of the growth. We didn't trace. I think we were working even more than usually because of everything that was happening. And that was an impact. And basically, there was a huge support from all the Western companies, like the United States, Canada, Europe, the support of Ukrainian companies. And that was the huge reason of this growth.
That's incredible. And so are you looking to raise any capital in the near term, or are you profitable and just reinvesting what you're making in terms of growth?
We're bootstrapped. Like, from time to time, we are looking for the opportunities to partner with some venture funds, but it's more like finding the right partner for our business.
Yeah.
And right now, like, we don't have any active opportunities for raising. I can say so.
I love a bootstrap story where there is growth and long-term success with almost 9 years of a business. So it's nice to raise capital when it's on your terms and you can find the right partner if it makes sense. Like I said, I'm very excited to see some of the use cases of the product. So do we want to dive into a quick demo? What use case do you want to share with us?
Let me just first introduce its use case. I think there couldn't be any better time for this podcast because I'm super excited to be announcing, like, this is the first time we are announcing the major reply updates that are about to happen in June this year. And with these updates, Reply will add some new critical components to its platform, like the AI SDR agents that I already mentioned, AI chats, the first sales-trained chatbot with video avatars. We're going to convert website traffic into leads, meetings booked, and new contacts. With a bunch of other platform improvements, like we added a few cool things to our sales outreach platform and email deliverability solution to make sure that emails fall into the inbox folder and into the spam folder. So the use case with the first thing that I want to share is actually this AI SDR. Imagine you have a 24/7 AI sales rep, AI SDR, who knows who you want to reach out to. And the only thing that it needs to get started is actually ask you who you want to reach out to. Who is your target audience?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is the industry like here who helps C-level managers in B2B software development to optimize and reduce their spend in some different software tools by providing a tool that makes a smart view of applications, data, and systems? And I'm reaching out because in this example, we just launched AI assistants, or we have a special offer for this for companies like yours and stuff like that. Even better, with the next version, you will be able just to provide your website domain and that's it. And AI will assume that, hey, is this the audience you want to reach out to? Is this your offer? Is this something significant that is happening in your company that I can use to kickstart this conversation? And the best part, AI suggests the audience. So basically, knowing, hey, you want to reach to C-level managers, but who exactly? At Reply, we have a B2B database of more than 100 million B2B contacts that AI agent can use to build up the audience for a sequence. So basically, this is the first step of building a multi-channel outreach sequence to automate personal communications. Once AI SDR knows who you want to reach out to, all the details about your offer and stuff like that, it suggests the specific audience. Let's say, who are the C-level managers? Well, it should be definitely, let's say, CEO and CMO or other people who actually match. And the best part of it, that AI has not just replies AI SDR agent. It's just the whole knowledge that ChatGPT has, right? Because our algorithm and our agents are built on GPT-4 provider. I can say so. And with that, it knows that, hey, this can be the right audience. But once the audience is suggested, AI creates sequence. And the sequence is just matching my offer and my intent of the whole outreach and suggests the steps that can be used for the sequence. Well, of course, I can change those steps and suggest, like, hey, I want to provide additional personalization here. And again, AI SDR can say, like, hey, you know what? I can suggest you this one-line opener for the context. I'm, like, getting the real-time information from LinkedIn.
what you're talking about, even on the contact side, is you don't need like a direct match with AI, right? In the past, it'd be like, okay, I want to reach out to this very specific role type. And if it's not a direct match, titles are different across every single organization. So the ability to think through that and not needing that direct match and being able to like navigate that is interesting.
You're absolutely right. And just to provide you even more sneak peek of this AI magic, just imagine that AI can also respond. This is our SDR agent, can respond to prospect emails. So let's say the AI launched the system, it suggests the audience and start this all outreach stuff. And then I received the response from my prospects, which are categorized based on the intent, like interested, not interested, no, forwarded, meeting intent. And then AI crafts the response on those. Those responses are now saved as AI drafts because we definitely want to leave some space for control for the user. But the whole responses are here. And let's say we can sneak peek at this response. This prospect email has the meeting intent response, like here. So reply categorizes to meeting response. And it crafts the reply. That's great. Well, feel free to reach out. And that's it. Like, when we get to this step, actually, of the whole process and realize that it also can be automated, our name as a company, Reply, it just got the additional sense, you know? Now we are replying to prospect emails. We're not just like doing everything to make user get those replies, but we are actually helping reply even on those prospect emails.
That's a good reference. I would say this is perfect. Hey, reply and reply.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, we are replying because we reply actually to those emails, and I like that even more now. Oh, because like I'm a marketer, I need the extra senses, you know, just to put into the branding, into the messaging. It's just matching the whole concept really, really great.
I think one of the good things about this is like you're setting up the reply, but you're not automatically sending the reply, and it gives the salesperson time to add like their personality to it because. And I would hope sales leaders would like encourage that. Demetrius and I talk about this, like I get a lot of emails sent from AI and a lot of times I can tell and I'm like, ugh. And I want some like personalized context to it. And I know you have other products that help do that with video and whatnot. But I think it's great that you give the salesperson that opportunity to add themselves into the email as well. But all the information's there. That's the hard part is like, let me go pull this and like get this. The personality part of it should be the easy part to add into an email.
And you know what? There is another way to do this because actually you can like, and we have this option in reply. A user can give all the input information to the agent and say like, hey, you know what? My tone of voice is like this. This is the phrase that I actually use on a like frequent basis. Try to copy me. Try to be me. And this is like having your AI avatar knowing how would you reply on this email.
It personalizes it.
Exactly. And that's a reality right now. I'm a big fan of Siri that it's not the world of scarcity, but with AI, there will be a world of abundance where a lot of stuff will be automated and that's for good. But returning back to the agents and to the reply platform, well, you know, in 2024, there were these big Google updates in terms of using Google API and deliverability and all this stuff. And it actually put cold outreach into a risky niche. But the point is that outreach can still be predictable. And we at Reply want outreach to be a predictable channel of lead generation. This is what I'm seeing with this major reply updates that we are having in June 2024 and basically a huge launch with the big event there. We want to democratize outreach again and make it reliable, scalable, and predictable. Those things that we're doing with reply with these AI agents, with evergreen sequences, just imagine that you won't be limited with number of contacts. AI will suggest new and new contacts and that actually put it into the sequence. You don't need to do anything about it. Your goal is to put the goal to the AI and say, hey, you know what? I need 50 demos. go and just book those demos. This is the offer. This is the audience. This is my tone of voice, just practice sequence. And that's it. Like, it just shifts the whole paradigm of cold outreach to another level. It should be predictable.
I agree with you. This is really going into that space, right? It's giving you this ability to select things based on your objectives in a more direct way. So what I mean by that, like you said, I need the 50 demos. Just pull me all the contacts that actually would qualify for that. Right, that means that there is a certain stage and engagement. There's the thread that is probably close to that. Till now, without the ChatGPT that it was embedded into these tools, we had something similar, but I don't think it was working to that extent. I mean, it was never designed to embrace so much data, right? Because you can connect to two databases, right? Essentially. So I agree. I think it's an important feature that it's allowing us to accelerate these decisions and translate them into some actions.
The whole business process on it. The only thing you need to do is to put the goals, and the whole process is like, it's just scalable automatically. And that's the point. And the limitations, it's just like, okay, we're going to rethink how to work with mailboxes. We will rethink how to work with the audience, but it's just the technical stuff. But the whole process is still like the outbound can be democratized, and it should be democratized again.
Yeah. I like your phrasing around AI not being scarcity, but abundance. Like, a good salesperson shouldn't rely on the fact of how good are they of getting out emails and checking off tasks. They should rely on, like, how good are they at demoing the product and connecting with people and hearing their concerns and coming back with a proposal that fits their needs. Like, that is the soft skills, but like really the important part of selling. And so I think what AI is doing is helping sellers develop those skills more. And I think, you know, it feels in line with some of what you're talking about. Is like, there's all this like cool, sexy product features of the AI and everything, but there's also this element of deliverability and like the back end challenges of that that you're helping to solve for companies as well, and making sure. Which is a big problem. If your emails aren't getting delivered, it doesn't matter how good they look.
How good is your AI agent, right? It's just, it doesn't matter. It's just not they are not delivered.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So one question for you about the personalization, because everybody's talking about that. And I've seen the tools that, you know, are used by these unfortunate sellers that Lizzie mentioned that are trying to reach me. And there's a lot of mismatch. So, you know, I see the personalization as a little like a double-edged sword, right? Like, yeah, you can personalize this, but if you miss, you miss pretty bad. You know, I don't work anymore somewhere. I don't do what you're telling me I do. My company doesn't do what you think it does, right? The more you deep you go, the more risk you take. And I think it underlines the importance of doing the proper research. But with a massive amount of contacts, that's almost impossible, right? So like Lizzie said, if someone is called VP of RevOps in one company, that could mean completely different in another company. Same title. So actually my question is, what is your take on this? Like, how you see this being solved on your platform? And how you suggest the sellers and the marketing and SDRs teams to manage this?
In April this year, we had a big conference, big online conference. It was B2B Pro Summit. And there was a panel discussion about personalization. And there was really hot debates about this topic. And one speaker was taking the position that, hey, actually personalization doesn't make sense at all. What matters is the targeting, the proper targeting, intent-based targeting. When actually, hey, if we get the notifications that, like in our systems, that this contact is kind of open to work, or they're hiring, or they, you name it, like started to use the software, then we can use this to reach out to them. I cannot say that personalization doesn't matter. I do believe that it does matter, but the intent and the right targeting, I think that this is the first step of the success. Because if it's the wrong time, well, your email can be super personalized and can be super relevant for me in general, but it's not the right time. And I probably won't even respond to it because I'm like, I have so many things in my list to do. And this is the point. At Reply, we believe that cold outreach is something that should become like a targeting on social media. When you use the interest category for a targeting, like, hey, I want to target people who are interested in AI, well, you name it, it can be anything else. Summer camps for the kids, right? And the advertising goes specifically to these people who are interested in this topic at this specific moment of time. The cold outreach should be the same. And actually, we at Reply want to make it exactly the same. We want to get this intent data from the market. And actually, with AI, it's much easier to do, like way easier to do now, just to analyze the, hey, so we can get that, hey, we have this notifications about the new interests or intents. So we can reach out to these people first because they know that they're super hot. They're interested in the matter of our outreach. This is the point, and this is about the matching the right audiences with the message. And this is what we want to do at Reply. And then goes personalization. It is important because we want to address every person in a unique way, right? It can be a group of people added to a sequence, but they have there can be some peculiarities of these outreach messages for each and every person. And this is where AI personalization comes into play. And I think you've heard about like one-line openers, the first paragraph in the email, like something really, really specific with this person, like congratulating on something, like really something huge that probably was posted on LinkedIn. And then like, again, targeting and then personalization.
Yeah, I disagree with intent.
Okay.
That speaker with intent being the only thing that's important. Like, I think to your point, you have it right of like, you got to get the intent right. But then it also needs to be personalized. And a good example of this is if I lead partnerships, right? If someone reaches out and says, I think we should partner. I'm like, why? like I, you know, versus, hey, we have a couple of mutual customers. We really think we can build out some use cases that tell a story to these customers and probably more mutual customers that we have. We'd love to set up a call to chat through this. I'm going to get on that call. I'm not going to get on the first call, right? Like I only have so much time in the day. And so I think there is the need for personalization, unless you're so high intent that like you don't care. Like you're like already thinking about buying the product, but you don't need to reach out to that person. So yeah, I think I like the way of thinking about it in steps. Like you have to nail the intent and the audience and segmentation, and then you can personalize. Dimitris, what are your thoughts?
I'm your distant cousin then. On that topic, because I'm not buying that story about when the sellers are reaching out to me and say, hey, congratulations on this. Like, of course, I know you don't care. So let's get down to the business. And I would actually appreciate it when people are straight into the kind of use cases, what this can do for me, how this can solve the problem. The problem is not the messaging itself. It's just if this is a format of this message that goes in volumes, you just don't listen. You don't read the beginning and the end. You're reading the merit. And unfortunately, I don't see this to end anytime soon with the proliferation of AI that can do a lot of that stuff automatically with the multiple bots that are not even making the seller aware that they're sending something to me. And actually, we reached that point already. So what really matters to me is the merit, that whole nice person. I mean, yeah, you have to put it because you don't want to be rude.
That's like good information to have for the call to be like, congratulations, I just saw blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I don't want that. I want the use case, but I want it personalized.
Yeah personalized, I agree. But, you know, what's the borderline for personalization is my question. I mean, I want to hear you both how you think about this, but I imagine the future, which is not very distant, where we're using a lot of first-party data that we all have on the social media these days. And that is a feed for personalization, right? Like, but not in the sense, oh, you posted this, you know, and you like Lizzie, or maybe you don't like Lizzie, right? So it's probably going to be more about, hey, what is the business that you've done and et cetera, that is telling a little bit about who you are, how you think. So it's an underlying characteristic that is today not driving any of these, I would say, definitions around the messaging, right? Like, if I'm the guy, well, I just told you, I prefer to have messages that are not having a beginning on the nice to haves. That's what's going to make a difference. That's what is the personalization to me. Technology probably can do this, but we have a legal constraint here, right? Like, how far you want to go creating a combined profile of Dimitri's from multiple social media, right? And what is going to tell you? Okay, it can tell you a lot of strange things, which maybe a lot of people don't want to reveal. So, oh, you get my point. That personalization is a little bit tricky.
Yeah, like user preference.
Yeah, I mean, you're crossing the line too often on the privacy side, right? And that, I think, is the next thing, the next battle for the whole industry. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people would agree with that. They don't have a problem, but there's a lot of people that do.
I think a reply you could have, like, okay, here are like the 3 to 5 personality types we've defined, right? And let's try all the emails and let's see what each user responds to. And you could actually start to categorize some of that, which you would be hard to do without AI before. Olivia, go ahead.
No, I think it's just that's definitely a good idea. I'm a big fan of psychology and like the human markets, of course. And I think that knowing the personality of the person and helping to define the right message, even knowing that, hey, this person expects to receive like really straightforward information, super relevant. So if we know that there is an intent from this person, let's craft a message like this, like, really straightforward. Others tend to prefer more exciting tone. And basically, again, referring to reply, we have the functionality that helps to, that is still not analyzing the person itself, the profile of the person, but it helps to craft in different friendly, exciting, professional, shorter, longer, and stuff like that. So it's just, it also can be customized. But getting back to the personalization, relying on proper targeting and intent-based targeting is more effective than relying only on presentation. Again, if it's not the right time, I won't react.
Because it doesn't matter.
Like, it doesn't matter right now. It can be really something relevant. Let's say that was yesterday. I launched my outreach sequence to media, announcing that we will have a major update. And I was using, for personalization, I was using the articles of this journalist that was published in specific media outlet, saying that, you know, hey, like, I'm really impressed with this article. And this is about personalization. Super relevant personalization, because the person, like, well, let's say there is, oh, that's a typical targeting. Well, I know my audience, I know that I want to reach out to journalists, but this personalization does make sense because I'm referring to a work of a person and I'm saying, like, we have, well, probably similar updates that you already covered. So I think you can be interested to cover us as well. The other stuff when talking about personalization can be like, hey, let's use personalized pictures. Like, you know, the person that is like holding a glass and AI is putting the name of the prospects automatically. So this is the picture, that the personalized picture. And in each and every email, there will be the name of a specific prospect. It's absolutely not new. I think it started in 2020 or something. But it catches attention. Like, if I'm opening email and I see that someone is like, hey, Olivia, I did something for you. I'm like, okay, well, probably it's not the best time, but well, let's see. It's just, you spend your time on building something for me, like a picture or even a video, then AI can also help here. But again, my point is that targeting first. Personalization does matter, but it's something second.
Yeah. And it changes, right? Like, as culture changes and evolves, what we think is creepy, what we are okay with, it changes from person to person, but the targeting doesn't, right? If someone's interested, they're interested. I want to shift gears a little bit into around your go-to-market strategy, which you started to touch on a little bit there. So you mentioned you target SMB and customers. What's kind of your typical ICP? Who are you targeting to use Reply.io, and who are some of your customers?
Sure, I'd love to cover that. So our ideal customer is the company Well, it can be different size from, one-man band startups to companies up to 200 employees. And the use cases are different. So let's say in companies of small size, our main user and decision maker is the founder, director, C-level executive. And they use Reply for multiple use cases, like reaching out to potential partners, reaching out to investors to raise money, reaching out to potential customers, and actually doing the sales job that actually, in most cases, fall into their responsibility. In companies like from 50 to 100 employees, it's more like the sales teams start to appear. And from here, we talk about automating specifically sales processes because we are really good at automated sales processes. Starting from this prospect search and lead search to automating the whole process up to response generation and syncing those leads with the CRM system. So back and forth, basically, leads can be taken from a CRM system, pushed into Reply sequence, then back to CRM, and it's just this constant process. In marketing departments, we use Reply to reach out to media, to reach out to other companies asking for a collaboration and partnership or link building and stuff like that. So multiple cases here. So it's just, in general, just to summarize that, customer-facing roles with founders in the core and sales teams. Speaking about industries, I would say that it's mainly tech businesses of different types, from marketplaces to financial services, so it can be everything there. Because sales outreach and cold outreach is just another standard of prospecting and lead generation. Like, it is there along with marketing, inbound marketing. And when we say that, hey, marketing, like sales department, it's just a constant dialogue between marketing and sales, like, hey, marketing, we need leads. Outreach is another channel, reliable channel to get those leads and deliver them to sales.
And who do you consider your competitors? Because a bunch come to mind, and like your variety of pillars of products, but a lot of them are targeting larger companies. So I'm curious who you consider kind of your main competitors in the space.
So it all started like back in 2017, 2018, our main competitors were SalesVault and Outreach. Then these companies added features related to revenue intelligence, just to cover the overall sales process of really big enterprises. And so far, I can say that our main competitors are Apollo.io, Levelist, Instantly, Klay to some extent.
Klay keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Not a company I was super aware of.
Well, especially with the AI revolution, I would say so. Right now, to start the new, like to create the tool, it requires much less resources. And we see that a lot of companies start to pull up just because they know how to speed up their development process with AI.
I would assume you're using some outbounding in your go-to-market, but what are the main channels? Are you doing inbound? Are you doing some product-led growth? What does your go-to-market strategy look like?
It is product-led heavily and inbound marketing in the core. So we actually invest in our content and SEO and events and awareness to drive the traffic to our website and then convert it through the product. We have two flows, basically product-led and sales-led. So we basically have a few sales reps in Reply who reach out to the leads in the product, but also work with the inbound demo requests from the website.
It makes sense that you're product-led. I was looking at your website and it's very well done. There's like multiple demos for things and it brings you through the story and the use cases. So I can see the product-led growth just in looking at your website. Since I'm in partnerships, I always have to ask, who are some of your bigger partners? I'm assuming you're integrated with all kinds of tools to help with, emails and some of the outreach and CRMs, but who are some of the main partners you work with?
Well, the CRMs, we have six native integrations: Salesforce, HubSpot, Lonesio, Pipedrive, just to name a few here. In terms of, data providers, as well as just, I would say like 5A5 and Novella and other data providers, just to mention here. And we also, like, we want to rebuild this process just a little bit to make sure that, like, in the perfect world, we want to have one new integration released in a week. 1 week, one integration like this.
Wow. That's impressive.
That is impressive.
With AI, like, if you challenge yourself, like, and try to brainstorm, actually, what can be automated and speed up by Reply, you will be surprised. In 2024, at Reply, we have, like, one of our objectives in the company is to automate 20% of our processes with AI, including development, including building integrations, including market research, watching trends, getting the urgent insights or just some notifications. Hey, this is what is happening right now, internal and external. It's just crazy what it can do. And the faster company leverages AI in every possible sphere of the business, the better it will be.
That's an incredible goal. I think every tech company should have a goal like that. Like, we want to improve productivity or internal processes with AI by X percent. Because I think there's, you know, there's a lot of hype around AI and, like, what can we do? Yeah. And how do we do things? And then you could layer things. Okay, here are the 10 things we're going to update, right? And it becomes very prescriptive and helps, you know, focus the team. But there's just so many unproductive things happening that I'm sure AI could help. I love that.
Yeah, that's a really good goal to have. And also, it's a reflection on how the leaders of the company are thinking about the emerging technologies, realizing how much it's going to change the way they operate. Because I think that's the quality change across the board. So the sooner you recognize that fact, the better. Which is a great segue to the next part on the product development. So what's, of course, you're releasing right now the AI assistant. What's next on the roadmap? Which direction are you going to take the product?
It's mainly AI. It's mainly about implementing AI even deeper into Reply to get those insights. Or with this new product AI chat that I already mentioned, that is a sales trained chatbot with AI avatars. Imagine that, well, it covers the inbound lead generation from the website. And we have Reply that automates outbound outreach and sales. So let's combine these tools together. As a marketer, as a marketing director, and I know that is the same for sales directors and sales teams. We want leads. We want high intent, hot leads. I don't care about the channel. I don't care whether that's my inbound or sales outbound. We want leads and we want to grow. You know what? Sales and marketing, when we are aligned, we are very alike. And we need leads. So just imagine that inbound and outbound can be integrated heavily. And I give you just a few examples. So imagine that sales team is doing their outreach and we know exactly who we reach out to. And once these people get into the website, our AI chat will pop up and say, "Welcome, Jason. We're super happy to hear you," and provide some very targeted information because we know who is Jason and we know what we already sent to Jason. On the other side, let's say we have people who landed on our website. Our AI chats communicated with them and they didn't convert. They left the website. But we can still find these people and put them into the systems.
Yeah.
Again, it's not like about chasing the person. Well, though it can sound like this, but it's more like staying relevant, staying up to date, keeping this warm connection with people who were on the website. Because, well, probably that was not the right time, but there will be right time. And if we know the inside from the outside that, hey, this is the right time, right now, we'll find this person and we'll be in front of this person. This is the idea. Like, inbound and outbound is just, they shouldn't be separate channels. They should be on one platform. They should be combined to get maximum value in the form of leads.
Yeah, it's lead generation. Yeah. Who cares how it came, to your point? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you care in a sense that you want to replicate something, but yes, all you care about is the effect, right? And you want to do more of the stuff that already works. So I think for that purpose, you know, you need to name them differently because they are just originating in a different place. Yeah. So yeah. I get it. But I think it became obvious to a lot of us that the sales process is so complicated. It has so many touches that at some point you just say, okay, it's actually one thing because it's hard to delineate what is what, especially in the long run. I agree with you on the point on keeping things warm because a lot of sales teams have this tactic of, you know, you drop and you ditch the lead if there's, you know, after a couple of intense interactions, there's nothing coming out of it. And then suddenly that lead is just going away. It's just drifting away. Keeping this warm and what a lot of marketers calling nurturing is important because I agree also on your point that regarding timing. Timing is everything. It's almost like in combat sports, right? Like it's anything you do, it's about timing, right? So how do you see the effective nurturing and a kind of post-intense interaction phase to set up? Honestly, I was very, very unsuccessful in doing that. And I had a very little preview of when that could come back, right? So the typical situation is when somebody's just calling this individual, the individual isn't responding or is responding and it's not responding, suddenly it's just ghosting, and then you keep this in nurturing. What you would recommend to the teams to do in order to stay up to date and actually have a little bit more preview when that could come back?
Well, I can see that it's a separate art of keeping in touch, but not being overwhelming in terms of your communication. So this is about like building a separate flow. How we're going to still be in touch with this person? Well, who is this person? How we get this content? Was it sourced? Or was that someone who visited our events or interacted on social media? Mm-hmm. We definitely want to appear there again. Well, because let's say if a person visited some of our webinars, we want probably to proceed communicating with this person in terms of, hey, we have another webinar. Or let's say we launched Academy on this topic that you were interested in. People tend to visit a company and product websites just for information, for education. And basically, marketers know that in B2B, education is a cornerstone of any marketing strategies. You need to educate. Like, what else can you build your inbound education? Well, probably some entertainment, but it is education, like providing value. Getting back to the sequence, it can be email newsletters about, hey, we have this another webinar, some content related, education related, let's say so. Again, knowing the source, like knowing that, hey, this person, well, we probably reached out to this person, or we know that this person visits our G2 file. Okay, that probably consideration stage. So it is mostly, you know, I really like how HubSpot tracks all these things in the contact profile. Because when you have all the systems connected to there, like it's just not an advertising, but really big fans of HubSpot and use HubSpot at reply. So we know that, hey, contact visited these pages. A contact received these emails sent from HubSpot and reply because we have this integration built. We are able to support these contacts. We're able to say, hey, it is still like not ready. We proceed to be in touch and provide some marketing information, which is more gentle compared to sales pitch emails, definitely.
As you talk about HubSpot, they're one of the best, I would say, at educating and using that as a go-to-market motion. Moving on to just giving out kudos to anyone else in the industry, are there any other companies that you think are doing really cool things that you're either using or partnering with that you want to give a shout out to?
I would mention Perplexity. This is another AI platform, well, probably similar to ChatGPT, but I really like the logic how it is built. Because, you know, when in 2023, all this hype, AI hype started and people like really experimenting with AI generated information, it resulted in a big batch of fake information that was generated. And people like, okay, so it is hallucinating from time to time. I really like Perplexity because it just provides the proof. So the whole engine, the whole research platform, it just provides the proof that, hey, I took this piece of information from here and the sources where it took the data from.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to check it out. Is it free or do you have to pay for it?
It is. It is like freemium product-led models. I'm really a big fan of them.
They have a paid version though, but you can use to a large extent the free version.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's what I'll be doing later today.
Uh-huh. You know, like it's just really exciting stuff now to explore the world and different topics because you know that you will actually get the true information.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it for the episode. Olivia, it was so good to talk to you, hear more about Reply. Thanks for sharing your experience of having a business in Ukraine and really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
So happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.